If you're making up that your business has won awards, that it's not award, that it's not done, or you know, saying that you've made £5 million for one of your clients when you haven't, I think that can be dangerous. But you know, a little sprinkling of something extra on some more upper funnel content, I think, is absolutely fine.
Welcome to Unmiss, your go-to digital marketing hub. I'm Anatoly Ulatovsky, here with expert tips and exclusive chats to boost your online game. Let's get started.
Hello, good people. Welcome to our show. Hello, bad people. Welcome to our show. Hello, welcome. Today we are going to discuss about storytelling. We want to share a lot more about that, how it's important to create this format. It doesn't matter what kind of content you have, text-based video, podcast, you need to share your stories, then results will come. You can't sell your products without sharing story. Basically, people buy stories, don't buy products, they buy solutions, and you can explain to them how to do it right. I'm so excited to discuss a lot more with Daniel Gibbs. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. I'm excited to dive in, and storytelling is one of my favorite topics to talk about. So yeah, I'm really excited to kind of to dig in and see where it takes us today.
I love this topic. I spoke with many great storytellers who wrote many books. I love this content, and I always think how to create my content differently, not just to share generic tips. You need to share your story and submit your call to action to the story. So many things we can discuss today, Daniel, but I want to start from your experience background. Just brief about you, about your experience, and why you decided to pay attention to storytelling style.
So I'm currently managing the agency marketing for Revenue Growth Agency. So we're an e-commerce specialist agency based in the UK. We deal with global clients, specifically who have premium and luxury products in the retail space. So that's kind of where I'm sitting at the moment. My background in marketing, I actually started in sales for an agency, and kind of learned the ropes and then gradually moved from there. So I've been in marketing for about 5 years now, and I've just kind of learned and absorbed as much information as I can. And I've got to this place now where I'm helping brands as well as helping our agency with storytelling to help with sales. I come from a storytelling background. So I have a background in performing arts. I have a background in creative writing, in acting and performance. And I try and weave that in as much as I can, because I know the power that stories have in terms of entertainment. And I look at how we can use those same techniques for advertising and for sales. Because as you mentioned, you know, stories are so powerful, emotional connections are so powerful, and I'm so interested in kind of the consumer psychology that goes into purchasing, that I think the two kind of go hand in hand. So I've really delved into that particular topic, and it doesn't matter whether you're B2B, B2C, e-commerce, you know, SaaS, it applies no matter where you sit, where or what your industry is. So I think it's really important to keep on top of it. And yeah, as I say, my speciality is kind of ideation and then content creation and that kind of thing, no matter what medium it's in.
Wow, I love your experience. Awesome. It looks great. So I have a bunch of questions. A lot of questions, okay. Daniel. Yeah. So be ready to reply to all of them.
More ready.
Because it can help a lot to my audience to find the right way. And I know many companies still get the wrong way because of lack of experience. And I see when companies chase high volume keywords or well-known topics, but for me, it's like to write a new book when we have 10,000 the same books. You need to stand out from the rest. And you mentioned about that you have experience in creative writing. And I want to know what it means. Explain in simple words what means creative writing, because I can ask on ChatGPT, please write creative text, and I get this result, but I'm not sure if it's creative. So any tips about that?
So creative writing as a whole in the UK means kind of writing fiction. Mm-hmm. So kind of weaving stories that don't already exist. And I think if you have somebody in your team, whether it's in your marketing team or your product team, that has the kind of imagination that can come up with these really unique stories, I think you should use them to kind of to help you. But yeah, my background, to say, was in writing for fiction and writing for stage, which is interesting because you put yourself, you basically put yourself in someone else's shoes and you're writing from their perspective, which from a marketing perspective is like putting yourself in your audience's shoes and advertising for them. So I think there's some interesting crossover. And yeah, I think it's a skill that we've lost a little bit in advertising and marketing because everyone's been so wrapped up in data and AI and machine learning, which I think is super important and something that's developing more and more quickly as time goes on. But maybe we've lost a little bit of that kind of creative spark, or lost a little bit of that confidence in being able to pitch something that's really interesting and really unique because people are so worried about all of the little nitty gritty bits.
Yeah, nice. Daniel, I want to help people who want to jump on this field to write stories completely from scratch, or someone who might have such experience, but with low results, almost nothing. And what I found from my experience, it's tough to start anything from scratch. It's better not to build this high expectations that you will win the world to get all engagement. And for example, when I started my PR, basically we paid $6,000 for one press release to PR agencies. Good money, and we decided to save this money. What we did, I wrote a bunch of press releases. I pitched all of them. I got zero mentions, zero results, but acquired experience how to do it right. Mm-hmm. Then we hired specialists who can write press releases. Most of them wrote for our blog, and there are great offers who can post on Forbes, Investopedia, big websites. And we just explain to them how to write press releases, what kind of information we need to have it, and pitched to write journalists. So basically by using tools to find relevant journalists, pitch them, and we got mentions on many big websites: Bloomberg, CNN, Business Insider, Investing.com, big websites, because we help on this niche. And I know it takes time and it's tough without patience. You can't craft a great story without writing a few bad stories, probably even more than a few. Sometimes you need to write dozen of bad stories. So can you tell how to learn much faster this process? How to, I don't know, because for me, I can read 100 books how to write stories, but if I do nothing, I can't write a great story. Mm-hmm. It's more important to have this balance between learning and practice. So let us know what to do if you do from scratch, or just have some small experience, not big.
Yeah, I think it's there's a couple of different routes that you can go down in terms of sourcing kind of that, what you're going to center your story around. Obviously the audience and your consumer has to really be at the heart of your story, and it has to resonate with them. So always having them in the back of your mind and making sure, like, is the audience going to find this interesting, I think is really important. In terms of getting started, depending on what your business is, you could have a look at, you know, the history of the business. If it's, for instance, a family-run business that's been around for generations, is there something that you can draw on from that experience in terms of talking about, you know, the difference between how the business was run 40 years ago compared to now? So for instance, Levi's, the denim company, do a really great ad campaign about how people used to buy Levi's like 100 years ago. And it's really, really fun, and they do it in a really engaging way, and with a little bit of humor as well, which I think always helps. So you could go down that route. I think the other route that you could go down is solving a problem, which is kind of what marketing 101 is taking a look at what problem you as a business solve and centering your story around that. So it could be, you could take a case study that you have in terms of, you know, have you helped a very specific business with a very specific problem? Can you build a story around that in terms of how it's helped their business, and almost like a success case that can work really well, especially for B2B businesses. If you're, you know, if you're an e-commerce business or you're starting up and you have a really interesting product, or you're in a competitive space, I would say get people in the room that they don't have to be from marketing. You know, take 5, 10, 15 of your employees, put them in a room together and just let them kind of chat about it. What do they like about the products? Why do they work there? You know, do they have any creative ideas? What would they like to see from the advertising? Have they seen any ads lately from other brands that they really love, or any stories from other brands that they love? Just get people in a room and start having conversation, and I think you'll be really surprised at what you can form out of that by taking people that you don't necessarily speak to on a day-to-day basis or that don't work in marketing all the time. I do think that marketers can get creatively drained quite quickly because we're constantly having to think of new ideas all the time. Yeah. So, you know, speak to, if you have like brick and mortar stores, speak to some of your retail staff. You know, speak to people in finance, speak to people who work in customer services and they take, you know, potentially your complaints on the phone. Just like get a really good feel about the business as a whole. And then I think, just be bold and be experimental with it. And I don't think there's such a thing as a wrong idea. You just haven't tested it yet.
And go ahead.
I was going to say, you mentioned there about, you know, you have to write 5-10 bad stories before you get a good one. The same is can be said for this. You'll come up with an idea, you'll test it, and it might bomb and it might not resonate at all, but you have to fail fast and then move on quite quickly.
Of course.
So I think, you know, just be brave with it, I think.
Yeah, you remind me of this quote that the era of lazy marketers is dead. So basically, you need to collect data, you need to learn the products, you need to understand audience before crafting your story. It takes time. Sometimes it takes a lot more than writing the story to collect the right data. I remember one of my podcasts with Jim Edwards. And he worked in Business Insider 10 years. He started this company from scratch. Then company was sold for $500 million. Great success. And he was one of top managers of this company. And, you know, he told me that success of Business Insider depends on creating non-boring content. You touched this topic. You explained that your story should be interesting. I know from personal experience, users are impatient. So basically, if you bring valuable stuff, but if it's boring, people bounce fast. Nobody cares about this value. It doesn't matter what kind of content, TikTok videos, YouTube article, YouTube videos, articles on blog, social media posts. People bounce fast if it's boring. So, Daniel, can you tell how to craft? You mentioned about B2B, about business, and I have this audience who can listen to this podcast. How to craft non-boring story and to bring value?
I think for B2B specifically, it can be trickier for sure. Sometimes it's not the most exciting thing that you're selling. Sometimes it is, and that's great, but sometimes it isn't. And also the purchase journey for B2B is so much longer. So it's not, you know, people aren't buying things like on the spur of the moment. They're not making snap decisions. It's generally a very considered purchase they're doing a lot of shopping around. So I think in terms of crafting an interesting story, I think the same still applies in terms of, you know, taking a look at your business, what you're doing that's different, and honing in on how you're different from your competitors and displaying that in a fun or interesting way. And, you know, that could be by, you know, user generated content from your internal teams. So I know that in agencies, like marketing agencies in general, there's a lot of like behind the scenes of how agencies run, and that can be really fun in terms of how people interact with clients. So I think those are a couple of different things, but I think the general idea is still the same. In terms of, you know, collecting data, knowing your product inside out, knowing what your USP is, knowing where you sit in the market, what your competitors are doing, and then thinking, well, how is this going to help my audience? What's my audience having an issue with? And how do we solve that? And then kind of using previous experience, success cases, you know, testimonials, and really kind of building a picture around what it would be like to work with your brand, especially for service-based businesses. Mm-hmm. You know, what's that going to look like? You know, you want to be easy to work with. You want it to be, you know, seamless. You need to be part of people's teams. And, you know, that's all kind of stock things that generally agencies will say. So, you know, it needs to be presented in a way that, as you said there, is interesting. People's attention spans haven't got shorter in my opinion, they haven't got shorter like the media says, but the choice of content is so vast now that people will only want to consume good content. So it's not that their attention spans are any shorter than they have been before. People are just a lot more clued up about what they want to consume. So yeah. Again, it goes back to who is your audience. So if you're a marketing agency or a creative agency or a web agency, who exactly is the decision maker in your target audience's business? So for revenue growth agency in particular, for us, it's e-commerce directors, it's heads of e-commerce, it's, you know, CMOs, marketing directors. Are they necessarily going to care about nitty-gritty PPC information? Probably not, because they're not in a Google Ads account every day. We know that they care more about strategy, and they care about revenue, and they care about making more money. So mm-hmm. we tend to spin our stories when we're producing content and we're telling our story as an agency. We focus on those parts, and we still produce content about service specific things, but we talk about the things that we know our audience cares about, and we present it in a way that we know that they're going to be able to consume it. So, you know, e-commerce directors or marketing directors are really time poor. They're really busy. They've got 100 things to do. So they're probably not going to read a 35-page white paper about the state of e-commerce. Yeah. But will they listen to, you know, a 15-minute webinar every week if it's a series? Yeah, probably. They can listen to it whenever they want. You know, they could do it on the commute, on their way to work. So, you know, it's thinking about things like that as well as the actual content. It's how you're posting it, where you're posting it, and who's going to be consuming it, especially for B2B businesses, that I think is more important as well.
Yeah, got it. Daniel, I have the question about companies mm-hmm. that don't need storytelling, and I see it. And for example, many times I ask some companies, it's better to use storytelling style. But when we checked content online, I don't see these stories. And probably customers, clients don't need it. I don't mm-hmm. want to deny it. But you mentioned about to be different, probably to change the game, to provide something new. And we tested, for example, for accounting tools, services. We wrote some stories on these tools, but it didn't work. Probably we wrote best stories. it also can be issue. But anyway, I want to ask you how to figure out when we need storytelling, when it's better to use other formats, I don't know, to share about topics. Because if customers are looking for some explanation, details. Without this story, calculations, mm-hmm. they don't need it. So let us know how to find this way.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you mentioned it there. It's the level at which you need storytelling is going to depend on your industry, for sure. Retail being at the very top of that mm-hmm. scale. And I'd say at the bottom, you're looking kind of, I don't know, solicitors, legal, lawyers, finance, potentially, people not necessarily needing, you know, your life story and a really interesting story. They want to know that you can do the job and you can do the job well. Or like, you know, if it's a business where, you know, if you're an accountant and or a solicitor and people want to know how much you'll charge for selling their house and things, you know, they don't need a whole big story about that. So I think mm-hmm. it always comes back to your needs of the customer. What does your customer need in order to purchase your services or buy your product? If they don't need tons of information and you know that they're going to be comparing on price, then just, you know, give them how much your stuff costs. Yeah. But if, you know, if it's something that is a little bit more complicated to explain potentially, then, you know, explaining your product by way of a story can be a really easy to consume way of explaining something. So if you have a really complicated product or a really complicated service, actually by explaining to somebody how it works by, you know, using an example that might be a story, I think can be helpful. And I also think that if you're just starting out and you have a really, really good product, you don't necessarily need a story initially. You don't need storytelling right from the outset if your product is really, really good, and you've done loads of testing and you've, you know, sent out a minimal viable product and that's done really well and you've got really good feedback. You could set up catalog ads or, you know, carousels and go right to the bottom of the funnel and people will buy. That will, I think, in time only get you so far. And what we do at Revenue Growth Agency is kind of take a look at, once you've exhausted that and you need to acquire new customers that have never heard of you before, who might not even be in the market to buy your products, you need to generate some demand, and stories are a really strong way of doing that. So I think there may become a point where if your pipeline's completely slowed down and, you know, you're not getting any new inquiries or any new leads, maybe it's time that you start thinking about how you might be able to drum up a little bit of demand by using a story. But I do agree, it's not going to be for everyone, and it's not going to work for everyone. It's going to really depend on who your audience is and what your product or service is, because some people won't care. Some audiences won't care. And that's okay.
Yeah, I think big brands also, even having great products, can use storytelling style. For example, I remember when Tim Cook shared about a new Apple Watch. After that, I bought three mm-hmm. pairs for me, for my son, for my wife, because these guys probably kill me if I buy only for myself. And, you know, what I like on this presentation, Tim Cook didn't share a lot of great benefits of this Apple Watch. He shared three stories: how this Apple Watch can decide my problems. He shared stories how this Apple Watch can help others. And after watching this, I got it. Wow, I need to buy it. I need to have it because I want to have this gadget that will decide my problems, simplify my life, many things. And it's the same with BMW, with any other brands. They use storytelling style. You know, it works well.
Yeah. I think, just to cut in, I think Apple, I quote this all the time, Apple are great at doing really subtle storytelling, and they've done it right from the beginning. When the iPod first launched, way back when, God, I can't even remember, it would have been years ago, years and years ago, instead of listing all of the technical specifications of the iPod, they just use the tagline 1,000 songs in your pocket.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's kind of the golden seed of storytelling, where they're putting themselves in the customer's shoes, and they know that their customers don't care what the RAM or the memory or anything like that is, but you know, or if we can give them 10,000 or 1,000 songs in their pocket, that's something that's going to really resonate. So I think Apple do it really, really well.
Yeah, I remember that was about iPod. Yeah, this gadget. Mm-hmm. When instead of telling that iPod has 10 gigabytes, probably most people don't understand what it means. But when Steve Jobs said about 10,000 songs in your pocket, wow. Yeah, it's a great message, really great message.
Yeah,
I love it. Daniel, I want to ask about sales. You know, you have position agency marketing manager, and you shared a lot of insights about marketing, storytelling. But in the end of any marketing, to get sales, and it's different direction. It's not like marketing. We can unite, we can separate, but it's better to unite, of course. Anyway, mm-hmm. I want to ask you about how to submit this call to action to your story. I mean, like, how to sell, because you can draft a great story, interesting story, but we need to add our products and encourage people to buy mm-hmm. these products that will decide problems, like it did it in your story.
Yeah, I think there's two different ways that you can do it, depending on whether you're like a D2C brand where people are purchasing stuff directly on your website, or whether you're a lead generation business and you have a sales team that close each deal. I think if we take the former and we have a look at like the website, you're as a user, you've been shown this story, maybe you've watched a video ad on YouTube, for instance, that's kind of told this really lovely story about your product. You've been interested, you've gone on the website, you've had a look, you know, you're kind of shopping around. And then there's what I call cognitive biases, and they're basically things that you can use to influence a purchase decision. And that's like social proofing, so having reviews of your product or service from other people that have used them. For service businesses, it could be offering a 7-day free trial, which can be really, really powerful. You could use scarcity, so say like there's only 10 products left, or you know, buy now, line ending soon. You know, there's loads of different things that you can do after you've told your story to influence somebody to purchase. And then it's just a case of kind of nurturing them. So, you know, if you have a high cart abandonment rate, it's how can you continue to nurture via email and all of that kind of stuff. So there's different, I would say, kind of marketing techniques that would get you to that sale. I think what's interesting is if you're operating a lead generation business where people are sending an inquiry. So your story has led to somebody going, oh, that's really interesting. I'd really like to hear more about how they did that, because I just read that blog article that told me they did it for one of my competitors, and I really want to get on the same level as that. So they send you an inquiry. It's then your sales team's responsibility to continue to tell that story. So when I used to work in sales, you don't want to just like spout loads of information about how great your business is, you know, how long you've been in business for and all of this kind of stuff. They want to know how you can solve their problems. And people listen to stories. So if I'm on a phone call, for instance, and someone just is like talking at me and just like reeling off all of the different services that they offer and all of the different things I could buy, I won't really listen to it. But if someone's saying, you know, oh, well, you know, we spoke to somebody who's in a similar position to you and we managed to do this for them, and now it's 6 months later and, you know, they've achieved this success and we'd like to do the same thing for you, as you're still telling a story. but it's just not in that, it's just not in that kind of creative way that you would have done at the beginning or at the top of the funnel. It's just a way of making sure that people are listening to you. And I think that works really well. Also just making a conversation. As humans, we tell stories all the time. I'm telling you one now.
Yeah.
You know, you talk to your friends and you talk about your day and you're telling them a story. Like, it's kind of ingrained in us as humans. And it's something that we've done since, you know, we were living in caves. So it's about having a conversation, bringing your own personal experiences as a salesperson to the table and building a relationship. And the way to build a relationship is through emotional connection. And the way to connect emotionally is through storytelling. So it all kind of comes back to that. I don't know if that's answered your question.
Yeah. It's a good reply. I love it, love it. Because it's tough to reply to any question in a few minutes. But guys, if you want to learn more from Daniel, you can follow on social media. I follow. I know it's important. So if you want to get more insights, just follow and learn. Daniel, I want to ask about fake stories. And I see when companies can't create a good story, probably they can, but don't know how. When they listen to this podcast, they will get more insights. But anyway, I see when companies are trying to create fake stories to get engagement, to get results, to sell products, any other things. So I want to ask, is it a good idea to create fake stories and unite with your products, or it's better to test various formats if your real stories don't work, just to keep searching to craft the skills? So your tips about that?
I think it depends. If you're fabricating results, so client results, or, you know, you're making up success, I think that can be tricky, because more than likely someone's probably going to ask you about it and you might not necessarily have the evidence to back up what you've said. So I think if you're just starting out and you don't have any case studies yet, or, you know, you're still in the process of pulling together testimonials and things, I wouldn't necessarily pluck them out of thin air and just make them up on the spot. I think that can look a little ingenuous. And you want to kind of appear authentic. So I think honesty is probably the best policy in that case, and just say, look, you know, we're working with these clients, but we, you know, we're in the process of pulling together case studies. I think that's fine. In terms of fake stories to kind of add a little razzle dazzle onto stuff that you've already got, I think that's okay. Or kind of fabricating something to prove a point. As I mentioned before, like if you had a really complicated product and you've built a story out of nothing to explain how the product works, I think that's good. I think that's great. It's a clever way of getting your point across. If you've, you know, written your stories, you've done an ad campaign, or you've got campaigns live and they're not working, try again and test something else. You know, I'm all about kind of failing fast, testing and learning. So if you've pulled together a story and you've put it out on, you know, paid social, or it's organic content, and you're finding that you're not getting the cut through or the click through or the engagement rate that you want, either take a look at rewriting that same piece of content, maybe in a different style, or if it's a blog post, would it work better as a video? And you can test that way. Or again, going back to the audience and thinking, is there a reason that it's not resonating with them? Would they prefer it in, you know, if it was embellished slightly? And then you can kind of, I think that's okay. But in terms of fake stories, I think you do have to be careful. We're also in this horrible kind of cancel culture, blame culture, where if you get found out that you've been stretching the truth or lying, people tend to make a huge deal out of it, and it might not be great for your reputation as a business if you've been caught out. So I would say just be careful in making things up from scratch that's to do with client results or you know.
Yeah. Oh,
if you're making up that your business has won awards that it's not award that it's not done, or you know, saying that you've made £5 million for one of your clients when you haven't, I think that can be dangerous. But you know, a little sprinkling of something extra on some more upper funnel content, I think, is absolutely fine.
Yeah, and from my personal experience, it's tough to get results. Whatever you do. If you start TikTok videos, YouTube videos, for example, I mentioned about my PR experience, and I wrote, I don't remember how many, a bunch of press releases. I got zero mentions, results, but today we write 12 press releases a week, and we paid $6,000 for one press release. It's more than $72,000 we save each week, just in one week. And we get great results by writing these press releases. It works well. And, you know, I couldn't achieve these results for 6 months. You know, 6 months without results. I always learn from Mr. Beast when he shared his story that he couldn't get results for, I don't remember how many years, but he bought first camera after 7 years of filming content. So he did it on his web camera. 7 years he couldn't allow to buy camera. Today, I don't know how much he has, probably a billion, but everyone knows Mr. Beast because of patience, because of loving what you do and just crafting your story. Just do it, you know, craft one story, two stories. I love when someone can tell you need to write 100 bad stories. Why not? Write 100 bad stories, test them, check on social media, because if it's not good for SEO, you can do it on social media. And because most posts are dying fast, so you can't get any negative effect from that. Just craft, but you can acquire experience. And I love to write content on social media to craft my skills to get better results. Daniel, I want to ask about one topic that it's tough to ignore today, about AI. And I mentioned in the beginning that I can ask on ChatGPT, craft my story. I can get it for a few seconds. And of course, it's not good way, but we use AI. I use a lot. I speak with ChatGPT more often than with my wife, because this tool can reply to many questions, can help me a lot. And anyway, I love my wife. I love ChatGPT. My main question, how to use it right? I mean, like, what I see when ChatGPT appealed, many marketers, I don't remember exactly the number, but probably around 5% of content creators, marketers, lost their jobs. It's not because of AI. It's because someone who adapted to AI can replace them. And you mentioned it's important to be creative, to write something new, and just let us know how to use then ChatGPT or any other AI tool to get great results if you craft your stories.
Yeah, I think I will always err on the side of like AI not being able to replace like the human brain. Obviously, a lot of storytelling relies on emotional connection, and I think that would be the one thing that maybe AI is not kind of I'd be worried if we started training AI to feel things, because then it's going to be like a whole robots are taking over the world situation. But in terms of using it as a tool, I think it can be really useful. So if you know your audience and you know who your ideal customer is, and you have kind of a persona about who they are and where they consume content and what they're interested in, I would say use that as like a parameter within ChatGPT or Bard or whatever you're using. choose your topic about what you want to talk about, and, you know, use it to kind of either come up with like a list of titles for things that you can then write yourself, or if you want to be more specific, you can kind of give it like H2 headings and it can write your paragraphs. I would say go back in and, you know, tweak it so to make sure that it sounds like you. Obviously, you can go in and you can ask ChatGPT for a particular tone of voice. So if you're using it for like kind of writing blog content, I would say, you know, you can use it for that, but make sure you're going in and you're adding a human element to it so that it doesn't sound like it's been written by ChatGPT, because I do see some blogs now where you can absolutely tell. In terms of using it for ideation, I think it can again be useful if you have a bit of a creative block and you can't think. So for instance, if you're just about to start out doing TikTok videos, if it was me, for instance, if we use me as an example, and I wanted to start to post on TikTok about marketing for e-commerce, but I had absolutely no idea where to start or how to do it, I could obviously say to ChatGPT, I want to make, you know, 6 videos a week about this particular topic. I need to have each video to have a really engaging hook, and I need each video to end with a call to action. And it could almost give you like a bit of a content plan that you can then use as a basis to go away. And I do think it can be useful for writing headlines. And, you know, I've done it before where I've written a title for a webinar and I thought that sounds so boring. No one is ever going to watch that webinar. So I've put it into ChatGPT and been like, can you make this sound a bit more interesting?
Yeah.
And it gives you tons of results. So I think for things like that, you know, the world is your oyster with it. It can really help you if you're at, you know, you've come to a bit of a standstill, you've hit a bit of a wall. And like you said before, it's about consistency as well. So I know that especially for video content, it can be really difficult to keep coming up with fresh ideas all the time, because especially on TikTok, you have to be consistent in order to build that following. If you're only posting once a month, you're probably not going to get any traction. But it can be really draining to be thinking of 5, 6, 7 different ideas a week so that you can post on there every day. So it can be a useful tool just to help you continue to churn out loads of ideas. And some of them will be rubbish and you won't want to use them. But
yeah.
I think, yeah, using it for that is great. I would always say if you're going to use it to write actual content, like actual blog posts or anything like that, I would always say don't just copy and paste it straight from your browser into your website. Like, actually take a look at what's been written and make sure you're tweaking it and adding bits in and things.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think if you have experience in specific topic, then you can recognize rubbish or not. Now, personally, for example, when I try to write any content for accounting, I can't. Because I'm not good with that. So it's better to ask accounting specialist who can craft this content. I can about marketing because I know this topic. I love it. I can share a lot of insights. I can recognize nonsense or something valuable, interesting. Basically, I usually write bad copies with many grammar mistakes. A lot of them, and ask ChatGPT, please edit in my style.
I think you touched upon something really interesting there. If you're ghost writing or you're a copywriter and you're writing for an industry that you don't know like the back of your hand, I think ChatGPT and AI can be great in giving you the technical information that you need. Even if you might not necessarily like understand it right down to a T, it can give you that knowledge. It's also great at pulling resources. So if you need stats, for instance, like legal stats or finance stats, and you don't know where to go, you can ask ChatGPT to find you and source you different websites or different white papers or journals and things that you can find that information. So I think it can, you can almost use it like a search engine, but it can spit out exactly what you want. And that, again, if you're so I wouldn't be able to write for an accountancy firm either, because I know nothing about any of that stuff. So I would probably then go to ChatGPT to give me that information that I might need. So I think you're right in using it for that as well.
Yeah, nice. Daniel, I want to ask about your experience. You have great experience, but I have people who want to acquire this experience like you. Okay. I know it takes time, but you can lead them in the right direction. So I want to ask you, if you started today without any experience on creating storytelling content, without any experience in marketing, but you have a dream, you want to become an expert in one day, you want to achieve something, so you want to go ahead when you have zero knowledge about this topic, what will you do if you do everything from scratch?
I think the first thing you can do is look at what's already there. So I love TV ads. I think TV ads are the pinnacle of storytelling. And I used to keep a list of all of the different TV ads that I loved. And then I would try and work out, well, why did I like them so much? And what was it about it that made them really memorable? So, you know, there's some TV ads that, I mean, especially in the UK, that are like really famous and people will still remember them now, even though they aired like 10, 15 years ago. So I'd say if I was just starting out, I would probably take a look at videos or ad campaigns that I remembered really well, and then try to pick apart why and how that story's been told or how that's worked. And then I would say it's difficult because it's not necessarily something that you can read about and kind of learn how to do in theory. It's about kind of getting your hands dirty and just doing it. So, you know, if you were just starting out and you had no marketing experience and you really wanted to get like a portfolio under your belt, or you wanted to, you know, approach a brand, pick five of your favorite brands and give, you know, mock something up, make them a story. It doesn't have to be like a, you know, it doesn't have to be Martin Scorsese, like 3-hour film epic. You know, you could draft up a storyboard, or you could come up with like some content topics or something. You could put together some social images that all kind of fall under the story that you've made for the brand, and kind of do it yourself and really just keep trying and testing and iterating, and, you know, asking people for feedback, I think, is really, really important in marketing. So, you know, get on LinkedIn, connect with marketers that you, from brands that you admire or from businesses that you admire, follow what they're doing, try and learn from them, engage with their posts, follow them on, you know, if they've got a YouTube channel, follow them there, you know, watch content like this, and just try and absorb as much information as you can, I think, to learn how the process works. But in terms of actually coming up with the ideas, that is only something that you're going to be able to do by practicing. And you can, and I you know, that's how I didn't do a degree in marketing. I didn't go to university and study advertising. I came out of it and I just kind of thought, oh, this is I've got a really fun idea for an ad campaign for this particular brand. I wonder what that would look like. And I just kind of had some fun with it. And, you know, they sit in a folder on my desktop computer and, you know, they're just there. So yeah. I think, you know, just have fun with it, get started. But yeah, look at the content that you love. You know, if there's a particular YouTuber that you love that's creating really great content, well, why do you like it? You know, if you signed up to a newsletter and you read every, you know, you read all their content every month, like, why do you love it so much? What is it about it? And then just try and like replicate that for maybe some brands that you like or that you'd want to work for. And then, yeah, just network, and LinkedIn is a great place to network. Ask questions, try and learn from people. If you can get a mentor in the space, even better, because they can keep you accountable for learning things. You know, get an internship, start from the bottom, work your way up. There's loads, I think there's loads of different ways you can do it. And but yeah, just be curious.
It's a huge list. You share a big list, you know. I don't know where to start, what to take. But yeah, I agree. I love all ideas, and I think it's a good example about to make your hands dirty. For example, Leo Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo prefer to hit the ball 10,000 times a day than to read a few books how to play soccer, you know. And it's the same with marketing. You can learn a lot. You can do, I don't know, to get all valuable insights. Personally, I have no time to consume 80% of new publications, videos, podcasts, because only 24 hours a day. If I consume this content, I still can get 80% of this content. But I know it's more important to practice, to act. If you act, then results will come. And I can skip learning because of practice. I keep learning. I love it on this podcast, on other podcasts. I can read blog articles, watch videos, but the best format is to act, you know, to make your hands dirty, then results will come. I couldn't agree more with that. And Daniel, I have my final question.
Okay.
Very important question for my audience, for me personally. About your daily routine or schedule, how to be disciplined on that. I know we have many distractions. Many things are coming. We need to think about our family, about kids, about, I don't know, to buy food, many different things. So, and we need to be active, you know, to share value, to bring value to customers. Let us know about your schedule, how you figure out all these things, how you choose priorities, because I have 100 things to do a day, but I can't do 100 things a day. So I usually choose priorities that will bring more value to my customers and to me, myself. So about your schedule.
Oh, well, that's a touchy subject for me because I'm not the best at managing my own time. So I, you know, have to-do lists and they're never ending. I would say in terms of my schedule, I always do the hard things first. So if I've got something that I know is going to be mentally quite difficult or, you know, technically quite challenging, or for instance, if we've had an email come in that I don't want to deal with, but I will always do the difficult things in the morning. I tend to be the most proactive in the morning. So I will do, you know, a lot of that kind of stuff. And then anything kind of left over, I will tackle in the afternoon. I cover so much stuff, and I spin so many plates, that I don't necessarily have like a really strict routine in terms of what my day looks like, because it's so different all the time. Because, you know, I'm writing blog posts, I'm doing webinars, and, you know, sometimes I'm dabbling in client work, and, you know, I've got so many things going on. I would say in terms of kind of managing my time, it's just about giving things the attention they deserve. As I say, getting the hard stuff out first. There's a saying, I don't know if it's just in England, it seems like it might be, that's called swallowing the frog. Mm-hmm. which is basically just like all of the things that you're putting off, just do them first and get them out of the way. So I always do that. And most of that is like, you know, dealing with emails or things that I don't enjoy necessarily doing as much. I also find I'm more creative in the afternoon. So if I've got like briefs that I need to answer, or I need to come up with ideas for things. I always tend to do that in the afternoon. But I don't have a crazy strict schedule, which is probably really bad, and my manager will probably shout at me for not having one. But yeah, it's I think when you work in a creative industry, it can be quite tricky to be really structured, because ideas will strike you at any time. So sometimes I'll, you know, wake up in the night with an idea and I have to kind of just like get it on paper and then go back to sleep. So yeah, I'm not super structured, which I know is not a very helpful answer at all. But yeah, it's just about setting my priorities, and I have a scale in terms of how I prioritize my tasks, which is whether it's you know, is it actually urgent, or is it just someone else telling me that it's urgent? And you know, is it something that I can delegate to somebody else, or is it something that I absolutely have to manage? And I kind of work it out, and I give it a number based on, you know, the priority that I deal with it straight away. And that's kind of how I manage my daily tasks in terms of like when things need to be done. And then just setting deadlines, just be really rigorous at setting yourself deadlines. So especially for me, because I manage my own time, I have to set myself my own deadlines. Otherwise I'll leave things to the last minute. So yeah.
Yeah. You know, I am on the same boat. It's not only you and I. Warren Buffett also shared that he can't structure his day. It's tough because we don't know what will bring in the next day. And it's important to move fast, to adapt whatever happens. And yeah, I think that's okay if you have unstructured day. And for me, it's more important to enjoy. If you love it, if you enjoy the process.
I think, you know, to make myself feel better. If you're, you know, there are some days that are really structured. So, you know, within the agency, we have content production days where we film a lot of our video content in advance. That's always planned and structured far in advance. So we'll spend a whole day producing video content, and you know, that's like a really structured day, and we've given ourselves a timetable and like time frames to do things in, and you know, there's a proper agenda and stuff. So you know, there are some times where we are really organized, and then other times where, as you say, you just can't be. You have to wait and kind of see what needs to be done that day, and you have to run with it. So you have to be able to switch quite quickly, I think, between those two different mindsets.
Yeah, nice. Love it. Daniel, it's a big pleasure to get on my show.
Oh, thanks.
To learn from you. Wow, it's valuable. Tell the best way
how to keep learning from you.
Yeah, the best way how to keep learning from you, how to reach out to you, how to follow you.
So mainly, well, LinkedIn is pretty much the only place that I post marketing content. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Danielle Gips, Gipps. And I post kind of fun opinion-based content on there. So I review social creative. I talk quite a lot about, I say, storytelling, my favorite subject. And then also a little bit about kind of how we measure storytelling and attribution and that kind of thing. So yeah, LinkedIn is the place to find me. I also answer all LinkedIn DMs, so if anyone's got any questions, I do go back to everybody. So that's the place.
Wow, you're so kind, because I have no time to reply to all questions. I wanna help anyone in this world, but I have no time.
You have to protect your time, don't you? So at the moment, you know, I don't have hundreds and hundreds of people messaging me, so that might change. I reply to everybody.
I get a lot of spam messages. I ignore them 100%, but for the rest, I try my best. I try my best, and I love it that you can help your audience, because I spoke with many great marketers like Rand Fishkin. He told that he still replies to all questions that are coming on email, on LinkedIn. If Rand can find time, So yeah, it's only excuses.
Yeah. I feel like if he's got time, I think we should probably all find a little bit of time, shouldn't we?
Yeah, love it, love it. Guys, you can find all the links to LinkedIn account, to the website, Revenue Growth Agency in the description below. Listen us on Apple, Google, Spotify. Thanks again for your time. Love it. So valuable. I recommend to anyone to follow Daniel on LinkedIn because I follow. It's a big mistake if you decided not to follow because you can't become a great marketer. Okay, guys, love you. See you.
Thanks for tuning in to Unmiss. Enjoyed the show? Drop us a review on your favorite platform and help us spread the digital marketing wisdom. See you next episode.